think that some people within it are reasonable. Even, she said with a chuckle, a Jedi. Keitar shot back another comment about how Republic culture was more dangerous than Republic law, and Obi-Wan recognized Rug's responses to it all. Not the specific words or rebuttals, but the way she tried to equally acknowledge and shut down Keitar's ire. Well, he'd had some experience with that in his life. This discourse continued back to their shuttle, a small guard craft that offered little more protection or maneuverability than his own borrowed craft. And while they bickered, Obi-Wan caught sight of a strange hovel beyond an alley of the dilapidated block. One more thing to check out before his way back. He considered asking them to come along, especially considering Rug's additional equipment. But something about Keitar's mood told him he should leave well enough alone. And the small bunker itself gave off a suspicious feel, a frequency in the Force that created an invisible disquiet, along with the fact that the entrance to it sat remarkably clear despite rubble strewn about everywhere else. I'll head back to my ship, he told them, giving them a farewell wave. They parted ways and boarded their craft, Rug nodding in acknowledgement while Keitar stared straight ahead behind the cockpit window. He started his walk ahead, waiting for their shuttle to lift up and disappear into the fog. When he concluded they'd flown far enough away not to detect his movements, he took out his macro binoculars and switched to thermal vision, a safety check of the shed's surrounding area for any starving corgi beasts that might be lurking for a human-sized snack. With the coast clear, he started forward, and though fatigue weighed down both his thoughts and movements, this seemed too anomalous to pass by. Chapter 23, Anakin Skywalker. The first 10 crates go to the neighborhood at Sector N7A1, Anakin said to the helmeted clone trooper in front of him. Then meet up with Captain Raptor at Fong Tim Square to split the remaining batch into groups for smaller distribution.
Right away, General.
The clone saluted, then turned to the juggernaut transport packed with more medical supplies than clones.
And be careful of the sand. I've seen worse, but this still gets in the transport's gears.
Anakin smirked, thinking of home. Pod racers levitated off the ground, but he'd certainly worked with a share of wheeled and treaded vehicles during his time. How the Jawas kept their sand crawler rolling, he'd never quite figured out. Langston's largest continent was mountainous, but with high winds and seasonal torrential rain. Communities sat at the base of mountains, but the weather mix also created an accumulation of blue-tinted sand just thick enough to be annoying, yet not quite a way of life. Still, it got in the joints of his mechanical hand, even when he'd covered it with a tight-fitting glove. The convoy away, Anakin removed the glove and tried to blow some of the grit out of his knuckles.
See?
He said to no one in particular. No one believes me, but it gets everywhere. He blew again, the cool of his breath tickling the adaptive hardware that translated into a sensory feeling, then shook his arm while flexing his fingers. Little bits of sand trickled out, and Anakin could practically hear Padme laughing at him like she had not that long ago, when they were hidden away in the Naboo countryside following their wedding. On that afternoon, they'd stood barefoot at the lake's edge, and even though Naboo's tranquil countryside proved idyllic, the grains of sand caused a squirmy feeling, a constant shifting to get comfortable. Padme noticed, of course, but because she always strove to understand others, she'd offered something that encapsulated everything about her.
After a few days on Tatooine, I get why you hate sand so much, she'd said with a laugh, before turning more thoughtful.
We come from different places, Annie. It informs so much of how we see the galaxy.
That moment was the only good thing to ever happen regarding sand. And here, as he flexed his fingers, he could feel the grit between the servos,
adding onto his already out-of-sync feeling, any motions coming with the annoyance of something stuck in the wrong place. He sighed, putting his glove back on. This would require a complete oil soak for the hand later when he had access to the cruiser's repair station. But for now, he'd deal with it. Around him, clones still moved back and forth, some chattering to one another about the most efficient way to mount supplies on the floating dollies, and others remarking on reports of various skirmishes breaking out across the mid-rim. Anakin looked back over the horizon, a cluster of shattered homes in the distance. Mill was supposed to have accompanied clones on a local drop-off, but the troopers appear to be coming back without her. He was about to intercept a group of clones with yellow trim painted across their helmets and shoulders when his emergency comm link beeped, the counterpart to the one he'd given Obi-Wan. "Obi-Wan, I'm here," he said, grabbing it from his belt.
Anakin, can't hear me."
"Semi-loud and semi-clear. Weren't you going to stick to mission parameters?" Silence came over the comm, and Anakin didn't know if his joke got stuck somewhere in the digital bits sent across the galaxy, or if Obi-Wan simply dodged the question. But then the comm broadcasted a laugh, a short burst that seemed to be the most his former master could let loose.
"Outside of parameters. Well, I suppose I've learned something from you after all. Listen, I need your help. I'm sending you an upload of scans and data. I have my suspicions about what it means, but I don't have any way to process it."
"Send it to me. I'll have R2 look at it."
"No. R2 interfaces with Republic networks. This can't have any official traces. It needs an information broker."
Anakin waited for the oncoming clone troopers to pass him by before responding.
"General,"
the lead soldier said with a salute without breaking stride. "Information broker?" Anakin asked, his voice quieter. "Is this what you do in your free time? You know, you could watch pod racing with me instead. I won't tell the Jedi Council. The Athio 700 is coming up." Obi-Wan responded without reaction.
"We need to act quickly. Contact Dexter Jetster on Coruscant in the Coco District. He will send you a secure channel to upload. Tell him it's from me."
"Wait, doesn't he own the diner? How does that come into play?"
"Dex will take care of it. I need a fast turnaround. I have less than a day to put together my findings."
Static popped over the comlink, and with that, Obi-Wan was gone. Something didn't quite add up. And even though Mill was still wandering somewhere among the dilapidated buildings, he owed it to Obi-Wan to get this done as soon as possible.
"Trooper!"
Anakin called out. The clone group stopped, all turning around.
"Is the shuttle ready to go back to the cruiser?"
"Not yet, sir,"
one of the clones replied, pointing to the transport.
"We're still unloading supplies."
Anakin looked back to the area where Mill had ventured out.
"I'll need to get back soon. And a secure comm channel. In a private room."
"Right away, sir. We'll make preparations."
The clone responded without question, without any hesitation. As a Padawan, Anakin's requests and commands would have come with the need to double-check with clone commanders or Jedi Knights. But here, there was the obedience of hierarchy. Something that created a direct chain of command. What a strange position to be in. Anakin reminded himself of what he'd told Mill, that the clones were just people trying to do their part. And staying cognizant of that would be necessary given the power of rank.
"Anything else, sir?"
"Not from you. I just gotta go pick up something I lost."
Anakin walked forward, and though Mill's presence usually echoed a low-level anxiety, he didn't get any ripples like that. And that in itself might have meant that Mill had found a focus, an unexpected calm. Strange.
"I'll be back soon," Anakin said.
"Understood."
The trooper saluted, his posture straightening.
"General!"
Chapter 24. Mil Alabeth.
Strange that here, amid the devastation of war, Mil felt at peace. Not when she looked around at the broken buildings, or walked alongside armored soldiers who all looked exactly the same without their helmets. Sure, they had little differences, hair, scars. Some even had tattoos. But still, all those same faces and voices, all with massive rifles. And they were so obedient. Anakin had revealed that he'd grown up enslaved, and now he was a Jedi commanding clones bred for war. The whole thing unnerved Mil. Yet when she'd asked the clones to leave her here for a few extra minutes, she'd been given space. And suddenly the universe made sense to her. In fact, she cracked open the door to the Force. And rather than it flooding her, she found herself in its currents, letting it guide her to kneel down, open her med pack, and stretch out her feelings just like they taught her at the temple. The family of Garal's siblings remained quiet, perhaps not too trusting of the large soldiers that roamed their neighborhoods. The scars of violence proved to be too unsettling, despite the fact that their loud shuttles and huge transports carried supplies. With this family, though, only two things mattered: the cough of an infant too young to speak, and the leg of the eldest sibling, where something had caused the normally scaly light gray skin to turn soft and oozing. For the infant, the Force guided Mil with the proper time to smack its back between its two shoulder scutes after it coughed, ejecting the dust that had tickled its throat. Connecting with the Force, it turned out, had its advantages. As for the eldest, it would require something more.
"I have Bacta,"
she said, tapping the canister at her feet. Though initiates only learned rudimentary first aid by her age, one thing she'd discovered was that Bacta often did the healing part on its own. It was the fear and pain that needed to be managed. Mil approached her, a 30-year-old girl named Rokura, who was a mere adolescent, given the long lifespans of the Garal.
"Scared is,"
Rokura said, and a tremble ran through her thick neck ridges, sweat caking her thick black hair.
"Limb pain feel. Back to help, not enough."
Mil nodded, understanding the broken basic. Above her, blaster bolts had torn holes in buildings, if the buildings still stood. Some of them didn't, only their foundations remaining. Dust tossed in the air, harsh enough that it got in her hair and tickled her horns. On her arms, flecks of Langston sand covered her tan wrist. In the Jedi Temple, even on the cruiser, war seemed so far away, but here it almost drew Mil out. Rokura moaned in pain, the infection in her leg likely making her delirious. She trembled when Mil put a cool cloth to her forehead, kicking out at the youngling. The commotion stirred the baby, a cry that quickly turned into coughing but settled with a few breaths, the debris and grit no longer in its lungs. One thing at a time, Mil closed her eyes and looked through the Force. The city's residents appeared in swirling colors, not quite the level of suffering she'd felt on Cato Neimoidia. This was calmer, like they'd gotten used to their situation. But here, Rokura spiked in her vision, shades of red in the form of a Garal girl. Mil put a hand over Rokura's head, then breathed, and in that breath, an instinct arose, as if the Force were a warm blanket, and Mil draped it around Rokura's ravaged body.
"I will help you,"
she whispered, without prompting or thought. And as if on command, the Garal's trembling stopped, her breath steadying. Mil blinked, an awakening similar to snapping out of a deep sleep. It took several seconds for her to return to the present, recent actions already a hazy memory.
She knew what happened, but the how and why seemed inscrutable. But Rokura still needed practical aid. Mill stood up and applied Bacta in swift movements. The wound fizzed as the Bacta's microbiotics activated immediately upon contact. She'll need to be still for a few minutes, she said to the family before going back over and putting her hand over Rokura's forehead again. Rest, she said in a clear, direct voice. Her eyes closed, letting herself sink deep enough into the force that all of the surrounding distress lit her senses like beacons within a 1,000-meter radius. Then she heard a voice through the ether, a chanting-like rhythm.
Mill. Mill. Mill.
Mill! It was Anakin. Shaken out of her trance, Mill stood up. The tails of her Jedi tunic tinted by layers of Langston's blue dust. R2-D2 chirped and whirred next to her, and though she didn't yet understand the astromech, it felt like a lecture about paying attention.
Master Skywalker,
We need to go. Why didn't you come back with the clones? He squinted, finally realizing the scene around him. Next to Mill, Rokura's siblings scooted back in the shadow of the tall Jedi.
They needed help, Mill said, and they were afraid when the clones were here. They had just seen the clones fighting battle droids a week ago, and the battle did this.
She gestured to the broken buildings around them.
To their home.
She pointed down at the resting Garl girl, now with closed eyes and deep, regular breaths.
She needed Bacta. And something to settle her nerves.
You did this? Anakin asked, kneeling down to inspect the situation more closely.
I'm sorry, Master Skywalker. I know it was disobeying commands, it's just...
How could she possibly explain this strange ability? The way hurt and agony became part of her field of vision, like a thermal sensor on a scope.
They needed help, and they were scared. They've already lost their parents in the fighting.
We need to go. But, Anakin said softly, you did the right thing.
You're not mad?
Mill didn't mean to respond with such surprise, but even the Padawans she'd been around seemed so stuck on the rules, and that came from all the older Jedi. But Anakin was different. She knew this from their first conversation. The Jedi aren't perfect, and sometimes we have to work around that. His head tilted, a thoughtful look on his face. You connected with the Force?
I let it in, yes,
Mill said with a nod, almost an affirmation to herself. Do you see now? Anakin asked, taking her hand. And she did, in a way. Not the way Jedi used the Force to jump really high or knock things down, but the connection between living things, the way they were all tiny specks across the same massive universe. For the first time in possibly her entire life, she understood. Mill nodded, prompting Anakin to smile.
I knew you would. Now, before we leave...
He pointed to the open med pack on the ground. Anything else they might need?
Chapter 25. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Sunrise on Cato Ne Moedia lacked the colors usually found on other planets. Each planet's unique atmospheric conditions and chemical makeup had given Obi-Wan some stirring views in his time. Bright and bold colors that looked like the Force had taken hold and burst into the physical realm in the form of brilliant splashes across the sky. But this planet was draped in fog, and the early morning on the surface may as well have been Coruscant's lower levels. Shadows and structures combined with thick mist to absorb most of the light, turning things mostly into an ashen gray outside of the occasional orange glow from trees. It provided good cover
as Obi-Wan sneaked down to get a closer look at the strange bunker he'd discovered right when Roog and Keetar took off. There were, of course, plenty of half-shattered buildings of all sizes, so another one the size of a speeder garage shouldn't have seemed out of place. But this one, the way the double doors sat neatly together without a trace of damage, it all appeared a little too intact for something that had withstood the massive shockwave of the structure crashing on the surface. Not to mention the unusual wake of the force he sensed from the bunker. It had come and gone in a flash, but all of that together pulled at him to explore further. A bunker that, of course, had been locked during that late night. A sealed door was always a cause for greater concern. Now he returned, various scanners and sensors packed with him. More important, he picked up several hunks of raw meat from a local market. He waited behind the shed, sitting quietly on a cracked retaining wall, then stretched out in the force to scan for any corgi beasts. It didn't take long to sense the region's natural wildlife. Obi-Wan tossed the first hunk of meat in the direction of the nearest corgi beast, then another a mere 10 meters out, the third right in front of the shed's door. Obi-Wan assessed his surroundings, first with his eyes and ears, then with the force. With things clear, he reached back and thrust his hand forward into the air, a telekinetic propulsion whipping through the space and causing a massive V-shaped dent in the door. The dim surroundings lit in a brilliant blue as Obi-Wan's lightsaber gave a snap hiss and came to life. He pierced the hinge on one side of the door, melting it through until it snapped off, then gripped the door through the force and pulled the corner with the severed hinge down, the metal groaning as it bent. Sweat formed on Obi-Wan's brow, the door piece stubbornly warping slower than he would like, and it gradually twisted until it created a hole big enough to crawl through, and damage that looked close enough to be impacts from wildlife to cover his tracks. One more scan around showed the area to be safe outside of a sniffing corgi beast, and Obi-Wan considered the animal's rough distance to the bait one more time before climbing in. His boots landed on the metal floor with a clang, the space empty enough to carry the sound. Little light made it through, so Obi-Wan activated his lightsaber again to get a better look. On one end sat a large locked case about a meter wide. Obi-Wan tugged at the lid for good measure. On the other, a small comm station appeared to be set up, a portable configuration sitting on a makeshift table along with a battery source, perhaps the kind usually manufactured to go in starfighters. It was enabled, though, and between the clean setup and the system's status lights and power indicators, it clearly had been established recently. Obi-Wan activated its interface, though the data log was blank. He almost began searching its database for deleted records when he noticed a small data pad plugged into its side. The data pad lit up, a card-sized device too small for its own screen that instead projected out a hologram of information. Obi-Wan blinked several times to make sure he read it correctly. Then he read it again and again. He checked details one more time before scrolling through different tabs of information. But rather than provide a clearer context to the findings, every passing word and number only amplified the mounting sense of dread growing in his gut. He took a breath and centered himself. After all, he had a job to do, and the Republic was counting on him. The display showed an analysis of bomb debris, explosive blast patterns, and structural damage, all side by side with the same type of equipment used by bomb squads and clone battalions. Schematics scrolled by with matching images, real-world evidence juxtaposed with designs from the Ministry of Science. Each successive screen of information broke down the connections in more detail, creating further links to the Republic. The anxiety in his gut grew, though he let the feelings pass and considered the bigger picture. If this data made a Jedi Master feel so much unease, it surely would be damning for an Neimoidian audience mourning a catastrophe. That thought propelled him back to constructive action, his mind starting to consider ways forward. Though things certainly looked bad for the Republic, many different ruses could be at play. The data itself could be falsified. The comparisons might be disinformation. The culprit may not have actually had ties to the Republic. Though several different paths forward played out in his head, they all started with the same first step. He'd brought along Anakin's comm link for an emergency. This constituted exactly that. He pulled it off his belt and sent a signal far across the galaxy to Anakin.
Obi-Wan, this better be good. We just got the younglings to settle down.
Anakin, he said, I have one more thing for you to send to Dex for analysis.
Didn't I just send you Dex's findings?
Which was true, but those findings came in the form of results from various scans and measurements, more for processing than anything else. Simply hints, not the hard, clear evidence he held before him.
This is different. Tell him the entire war may hinge on this. He can't get this wrong.
Anakin's cheeky tone hardened, and Obi-Wan could practically see his eyes narrowing in serious thought.
What have you found?
A data pad of unknown origin, tucked away in a hidden bunker on the surface. Its contents show a clear link to Republic materials and protocols.
It's false. It has to be false. Someone is trying to trick you.
That's what I need you to prove.
Obi-Wan opened the access port in the back of the data pad, then connected it to the comlink.
I'm sending you everything on here. Do not tell anyone about this. Not the clones, not the Jedi Council. This information cannot have any possibility of getting out until we determine its source and validity.
Are you sure? Keeping this from the Council?
Such a question surprised Obi-Wan. It was a reasonable thing to ask, though having Anakin of all people ask it caught him off guard. Perhaps his former apprentice was maturing after all.
The information is too volatile. The local government already has suspicions. We must keep any official communications out of this until we have definitive proof that it's falsified.
Understood.
Anakin went silent, though the transmission channel remained open.
What will you do with the data pad?
I'm not sure yet.
Leaving it here wasn't an option. It had to be safeguarded. But he couldn't carry it the whole time. Not with the possibility of encountering guards and officials.
Every choice comes with an inherent risk.
What if...
Anakin paused, his voice lowering.
What if you destroy it?
Obi-Wan wanted to be shocked at such a suggestion. Extreme measures like that dipped into the deceptive ways that led to the separatist mentality in the first place. But the truth was, he'd considered such a thing. In a time when Jedi planned military operations, Padawans became soldiers, and a clone army appeared out of nowhere, all of the clear delineations of roles, of protocols, of morality itself suddenly disappeared, leaving only a fuzzy definition of what right and wrong were supposed to be.
I have thought about it,
he said, as much an admission to himself as to Anakin.
Especially since I'm sending you the data. But no, we need to keep the original intact.
He switched off its glowing holographic projection and assessed the device itself.
I think it's small enough to fit into that secure case you gave.
Wait,
Anakin said.
Nothing is coming through on my end.
Blast it.
Obi-Wan looked up at the bunker ceiling, though the layers of debris, mist, mountainous arches, and the still-suspended cities of Zara probably caused more interference than a simple layer of metal. I'll need to get off the surface. Stand by while I get back up there.
Okay, I'll be waiting. Keep that safe until you can send me a copy.
Agreed. I'll get up there as fast as I can. Kenobi out. The comm link beeped. Then Obi-Wan took one last look around the bunker. The communications terminal, the locked case, all of it would have to wait for further investigation. Right now, his priority was getting back into comm range. Obi-Wan considered the few pieces of bait he had remaining for the Corgi beasts. He kept one in his pouch in case he encountered any wildlife on his way back to his craft, then threw the remainder by the door. Within seconds, a shuffling noise stirred in the debris down the cracked alleyway, and Obi-Wan departed, reassured that the local wildlife would cover his tracks. The last time Obi-Wan was in a bar, he nudged a young man to go home and rethink his life, then severed the arm of a would-be assassin. And while that hadn't happened too long ago, the war had stopped giving any meaning to time, making the immediate task seem excruciatingly infinite while the days counted quickly. How had they gone from greeting Senator Amidala in her apartment to being thrown into the middle of war, with all of its skirmishes and subterfuge in such a short period? Indeed, the war had escalated so fast that quiet moments to ask how and why they got there proved rare. So when they arrived, he took advantage. Obi-Wan sat at the bar, allowing himself a moment's peace to consider it all. Once back on Zara streets, he'd successfully transmitted the data to Anakin, who promised to get in touch with Dex as soon as possible. He'd then hidden the device in the secure case with the comm link before leaving for the less glamorous part of Zara. Only now did he have time to ruminate. The war, Dooku, the clones, the mystery data. And he gave himself time to have a drink. If the locals knew who he was or why he'd come to the planet, it didn't seem like they cared. At least not in this particular pub that Roog had suggested. Perhaps it had to do with its location, a neighborhood buried far off by one of Zara's struts and far from the center of the government's ornate buildings and brightly lit commercial district. In this small, stuffy room, a mix of Nemoidians and off-worlders sat shoulder to shoulder. A thick burning cloud of some type of smoked spice trailing through the air. The wall of chatter blanketed sound enough that he almost didn't notice Roog sitting down next to him, still in her commando outfit, but without the outer layer of maroon armor. "Your apprentice isn't here," Obi-Wan pointed at the empty stool next to him. "I saved two spots. He seems like he could use a drink. Or two." "I needed a break," she said with a laugh. "He's a bit moody these days. What's your word for them?" She flipped a coin at the bartender, a different currency than the standard Republic credit chip. "Padawan." Obi-Wan had asked the question as a means of casual conversation, though it came with the benefit of stalling as he weighed bringing up what he'd seen earlier. Roog carried herself differently than Kitar, and definitely Ventress. Weary, weathered, but held by a strong moral compass. Would that be enough for her to accept the revelation of the mystery datapad without an overreaction? He bit down on his lip while considering the alternatives, including the possibility of simply not telling Roog. "My own apprentice actually was recently promoted. He's off on his own now, trying to save the galaxy through willpower alone." Roog laughed as the bartender slid over a drink so roughly that it spilled out into her long green fingers as she caught it. "How long until reality hits him? He may be even more stubborn than Kita." She shook her head, taking down half her drink in one gulp.
Lucky us, right? She asked. He's a good kid. Just caught up and all. She gestured around them. This. I'm trying to keep him away from Ventress. She's a little too eager, if you ask me. I'm not terribly fond of any agent of Dooku's. See? At least you're honest with me, she said, taking a smaller sip. I have findings for you, as I for you. Well then, Rug held up her remaining drink. Obi-Wan clinked his glass against hers, and they both took a sip. It's not much to go on. Further scans. We've lined up some more security recordings with the simulation to try to identify the exact chemical mixture for the blast radius, explosion heat, that sort of stuff. Take a look. She slid a data pad his way, though he didn't pick it up, instead focusing on his drink. She looked his way, then back at her own glass, then back at him. I do. She started before looking all around the room. I do have a lead. Obi-Wan immediately thought of Anakin, somewhere across the galaxy getting information from Dex. Obi-Wan said he wanted the truth. He said that to Rug, to the Jedi Council, to Palpatine, to Dooku. But right now, he didn't necessarily want the truth. He wanted Anakin to report that the information on that data pad was falsified somehow, or out of context, or something that would not link the Republic to such morally bankrupt standards. And Rug, was her lead the same information? Was that possibly even her bunker? It is only a lead. I need to run further analysis. Getting discreet access to the labs right now is difficult. Is it definitive? We'll find out. Rug looked down at the amber fizzing liquid in her glass. I don't want to bias your investigation, so forget I said anything. For now, could be nothing. What about you? Nothing to make a strong case either way. He pulled out his own data pad, the one with Dex's report on scans and measurements, and made the decision right then to omit any mention of the other one hidden in his quarters, the one with potentially damning evidence. Trace elements found in common explosives. Blast zones representative of 7 different types of explosive designs. Destructive capabilities found on the black market, but also common in many militaries. And my research shows no chatter about Ketonemoria among bounty hunters or spice miners, he said, leaving out any details of making any transmissions. That's forensic evidence. You don't have any leads? Rug asked with a heavy sigh. They looked at each other, noise from the pub creating a tornado of sound, glasses clinking, people of all different species shouting, laughter and claps coming in from all corners of the cramped room. Somehow life moved on here. Even though each of these people probably felt the toll of Katasura. He asked himself one final time if he should mention the mystery data pad. And once again, he resisted. Not with what it revealed, nor how he found it. He simply needed more time. Not that I can speak of now. Then that's it, she said, shaking her head. Thousands dead. Unfathomable damage, and all we have are some chemical readouts and a lead that may be nothing. I have full faith in the truth, Obi-Wan said, though at that moment, such a claim felt like a bit of a stretch. We just need to trust each other. Rug gave a quiet chuckle. Oh, I forgot, you Jedi are peacekeepers. I admire your optimism. To trust, she said, holding up her nearly empty glass. I have a bad feeling about this. Obi-Wan raised his in return, then spoke softly, almost as much for himself as for her. Without trust, we have nothing. Without truth, we have nothing. We must have faith in it. And that was as much a part of him as his connection to the Force. Truth. I'll let you in on a secret. You know who forges that truth? Rug asked, the ridge above her left eye raised. People like me. You never see us, but that's what we do. I've killed bad people and I've killed good people. People who deserved it and people whose only mistake was that the Trade Federation felt they got in the way. You know what I've realized? What's that? He asked, finishing his drink. Almost everyone deserved it. To some degree. The group blocking shipping lanes in the Outer Rim. Maybe they're doing it to claim a bigger stake for the right reason. To help overturn some injustice that affected their planet. But the other side, that blockade delays the shipment of medical supplies to a planet facing famine. Populations that will never meet. All hurting one another without ever thinking about it. We're connected. Every one of us in the galaxy. Rug's fingers circled the rim of her glass. For every gain, someone else has a loss. Justice doesn't really exist. Not for everyone. I'm sorry you feel that way, Obi-Wan said, sincerely and without bite. Part of him understood her. He really did. He had seen planets, systems, entire populations deal with injustice. Her words carried a logic, and he recognized it. He simply chose not to give in to the cynicism. But they had lived very different lives. When my government told me to kill, she tapped a finger against the bar. I killed. Because almost every one of my targets deserved it. One way or another. But not the people on Katasura. They were living their lives. Cato Neimoidia is neutral. Her body slumped over the bar, red eyes squeezed shut. Cato Neimoidia is neutral, she said again. We will get to the truth. Obi-Wan's mind returned to the mystery data pad, the damning evidence. He wanted to will it into something that cleared the Republic, but a shift came in him. A recognition that Rug was right. The truth was bigger than just the Republic's needs. If it turns out to be difficult and ugly, then we will still turn that into justice. We just need time. Then what? That doesn't bring back the people who fell to the surface. Does that honor them? Does that do right by them? They sat in silence, empty drink glasses in hand, as Obi-Wan considered the path ahead. No, it does not. But I believe justice finds a way. It has to. Otherwise, why are we even here? We choose to do right, even in the face of so much wrong. Because there is no other way. A good minute passed before Rug tossed another several coins onto the bar and gestured for a refill. The bartender looked at her and she held up two fingers. In theory, you're right. But I've seen it firsthand. She stared straight down at her folded arms. This galaxy. It tries to break you. We can never let it do that. We must have hope. Another two glasses slid down the bar. She caught both and took one down in a single gulp before handing the second to Obi-Wan. Unfortunately, she said as she waved to the bartender again, I became numb to hope a long time ago. Chapter 26. Asajj Ventress. Keitar proved himself eager to listen to anything Ventress had to say, which she understood. All of his pain and rage bubbled under the surface, searching for some type of release. It was fortunate for him that she had come along, fortunate that she had encountered Keitar and his more prickly partner when she did. Fortunate that Keitar
found her shortly after their shift. She'd listened, of course, walking with him, sitting with him, letting the young man vent his fury about Katasura, about the lives lost, about his suspicions about the Republic. He didn't prove to be an expert at science, though, letting his emotions make illogical conclusions about explosives and further conspiracies. Such diatribes were as irritating as they were amusing. But she stayed quiet, using the mere act of silent acceptance to earn his trust. But now she would take action, turn the tables. He probably wouldn't even realize it. They stepped through the mists of Cato Neimoidia, a deliberate journey from where she landed her ship to the bunker, something she'd set up even before she announced her presence to the local government. It wasn't the most direct or efficient way, but Kitar simply followed her, mostly in silence, as he took in the devastation of Katasura's fallen neighborhood. Ventress made sure to point out when they passed something that might specifically needle Kitar's rage, asking questions about a crushed museum or the markers left where bodies had been discovered, the whole journey taking several times longer than it should have. That was all by design. I understand your concerns and your anger, she said. I wanted to. They stopped, the most unexpected sight in front of her. What's this place? He asked. Ventress squinted, a quick assessment of what had happened. And then she saw it, one little giveaway that prompted the corner of her lip to curl up. Kenobi had visited, hadn't he? The Confederacy set me up with equipment, she said. I've stored it down here. They approached the building, each step revealing further details under the full moonlight. Kitar knelt down, then reached to the ground. He held up small tufts of fur, then pointed at the splashes of blood on the bunker before drawing his pistol. From behind the structure, a corgi beast waddled out, still chewing on a piece of meat, its large ears forward. The wildlife, Kitar said. It must have hunted its prey here. He gestured to the massive dent in the front door as they got closer. Looks like it collided with the door when they fought. The creature locked eyes with Ventress, though she held a hand out, each step taken with cautious approach while it sniffed the air. It swallowed its meat, then moved tentatively closer to her. Ventress reached out through the Force, tapping into a rarely used sense in her, a simple communication to tell creatures that she was safe. Large brown eyes the size of fists looked her way, then softened. Ventress removed her hood, then scratched the beast on the side of its nose, fingers entangled in whiskers. I understand the drive to survive, she said, before looking around to scan the area. Other than hints of further wildlife, she didn't detect any presences. It is not its fault. Here. She reached into a belt pouch. Enjoy some rations. Kitar caught up to them, though he kept several meters distance. Their environment has been disturbed by the crash. I imagine it was quite disruptive. Ventress paused, then stepped over to the broken door. Curious, she said, her finger tracing the area where a distinct circular puncture showed the scars of burning and melting. Clever, Kenobi. What's that? Kitar asked. Oh, she said. Nothing. I am simply marveling at the strength of these beasts. Ventress petted the creature once more and it turned, bounding off into the night, only a few stray tufts of fur trailing behind. It appears this bunker is no longer safe from the local wildlife. Come, I could use your help. They climbed through the opening, which offered just enough space for a single person. Kitar snapped on the light from his shoulder, and Ventress assessed the situation. Most of it looked intact, though there wasn't much there to begin with. The comm system still appeared capable of transmitting, and the case in the corner appeared sealed. A firm tug on the lid showed the same. What was missing, though, was the data pad. She looked around the comm station, checked the corners, but the light equipment in the bunker ended the search quickly. She'd planned on giving the information to Kitar, a means of pushing him over the edge he precariously clung to. Her plans would have to change. But her goal? That remained. In fact, this might prove to be even more useful in pushing Kitar. I want you to consider this. What if there was a way to ensure that Cato Nemoidia never supported the Republic again? Ventress asked, walking over to the secured case in the corner. What would that be worth? Almost anything, Kitar said in a quick response. Almost anything? Ventress tilted her chin up and gave a shrug. Or anything.
It depends on the risk.
Kitar crossed his arms, the motion partially blocking his shoulder lamp.
My people have suffered greatly.
There it was. That heralded Nemoidian risk assessment. Such an inherent trait seemed beneficial in most situations. However, when passions ran high, all it took was a few choice words to change things by 1%, possibly 2%. Sometimes that was all that was necessary. Let us consider that. Of all the Nemoidians in the galaxy, is this their greatest injustice? Or is it the long history of quiet prejudice they have faced? Ventress looked him in the eye, then gave the thought several seconds to sink in. Individuals died with Katasura. Your people have faced a different battle long before, all across the galaxy. People like... She stepped forward, now only an arm's length between them. Your parents? Kitar blinked several times before his eyes fell to the floor. You could get justice for Katasura. Or you might think bigger than that. Think about the entire planet, the Trade Federation. Ventress turned her back to Kitar, one arm up. Every Nemoidian in the galaxy. She waited, his silence telling her that her words dug in deep. Now was the perfect time. I have something to show you, she said, stepping over to the locked case on the floor. A biometric scanner glowed to life, a single green line running over her palm before the locking mechanism whirred and clicked. She lifted the lid, and the illumination from Kitar's shoulder lamp cast shadows as he came closer to it. He looked inside, a sharp gasp indicating he realized what it contained. Oh, don't worry. These explosives have nothing to do with the tragedy of the Katasura bombing, I assure you of that. This was the truth, though Ventress wondered how deep her claws were in him at this point. He may have believed anything she said at this point, truth or lie. She leaned over behind him, a direct strength to her next words. What this does offer is the opportunity to make sure Katasura is never forgotten. He said, a tremble rippling through his body, something Ventress detected despite his guard armor. I don't understand. A betrayal of this magnitude needs someone to stand up for what is right. She let him have a moment, the power of mere words exploding into possibilities on display in Kitar's expression. Consider this a tool to do just that.
Do what?
Make a statement. Of some sort. Ventress already had a suggestion in mind, but she drew her words out with intention,
as if this were a sudden burst of inspiration. Perhaps the Republic Consulate Office in the east wing of the Capitol complex. It is a single-person room that is rarely occupied. Did you consider why it is always empty?
Razbohan Frisk? The regional diplomat? She covers multiple systems. She's elsewhere most of the time.
Doesn't that frustrate you? The Republic cares so little that the assigned diplomat simply visits for a day as a formality, rather than a true sense of duty. She nodded, a gesture to suggest confidence in the idea, but really the move had a much more calculated purpose. It gave Kitar permission to consider it. A single explosive, she continued, at that office. A statement without risk. A bomb. Kitar slowed as if dozens of thoughts were encapsulated in that single word.
I don't know. I need to think about it.
Of course. His hesitation marked her victory, because it showed consideration rather than outright rejection. All she needed to do was give him the proper space and motivation to turn that into something more. You must calculate what you're willing to sacrifice. In the meantime, we should finish here and move this somewhere secure from the local wildlife. She glanced over her shoulder, then back at Kitar. We wouldn't want them to get hurt. Besides, there's something on the surface I need to find.
What's that?
He asked, still staring at the explosive material in the case. You said you find that Jedi to be honest, honorable, even though you disagree with him.
He seems that way, yes. Rug trusts him, and I trust her.
In the dark, Ventress smiled a grin so large that she would only allow it given that she stood behind Kitar. Beneath her cloak, her hands instinctively reached for the lightsaber hilts that hung by her hips, weapons that would soon come into play. But not here. For now, they'd stay hidden, obscured by draped fabric. Let's find out what he really brought with him to Cato Neimoidia, shall we?
Chapter 27, Anakin Skywalker.
Anakin clicked the button again, prompting a single beep, and again, nothing. Come on, Obi-Wan, he muttered to himself. He paced around the small room, a makeshift office tucked to the side of a random hallway in the cruiser's lower level. From the window, he saw the loading bay, troops walking back and forth, groups of clone troopers in green helmets passing by, further troopers in armor with gray patches and lines. At the end of the bay, a shuttle landed. A different group with yellow-trimmed armor unloading, empty supply crates in their arms. And behind him, Mill sat outside the door, waiting patiently. She didn't ask why he huddled in there, but she agreed to wait. Anakin wasn't even sure why he kept her around when she could have easily been dispatched to the other younglings. But from the little time they'd spent together, he'd gotten the sense that she'd learn more around him than with the rambunctious initiates more interested in force trickery than what was happening down on Langston. At the very least, she had way more patience than those younglings.
Where are you, Obi-Wan?
Anakin said to himself, clicking the button on his comlink again. The beep came and went again, a call with no answer. Anakin held up the device, talking to it as if it were a standard communicator.
Come in, Obi-Wan. This is your really annoyed former Padawan.
But of course those words wouldn't transmit across the galaxy. Not until Obi-Wan picked up on his end. Anakin supposed that he might have been tied up in something important, or he may have simply forgotten the communicator in its secured case.
Whatever the reason, a problem still existed in the form of some really important data, some really damning data, and simply standing around waiting for the fallout drove Anakin mad. Anakin checked the comlink's transmission logs again and made sure that Dex's report was received by Obi-Wan's device. Which it was. Which meant that Obi-Wan now had confirmation that all of the data he'd discovered on Cadon Amodia's surface was authentic. Where it all originated remained undetermined. But all of the technical links tying details directly to the Republic, they were real. And Anakin didn't know what to do about that except pace around the room, repeatedly hitting the button on the comlink. He glanced over at the door, which remained shut, Mill outside. They were supposed to be meeting up with the rest of the younglings for a lesson on local maps, and how the climate of a planet influenced its topography, and thus the way the society built its community. A valuable lesson, to be sure, both from a cultural and tactical perspective. But really, Anakin needed to hear from Obi-Wan. For now, the best he could do was leave him a message. He clicked the button twice, and a chirp with a higher tone beeped to indicate it was recording. Obi-Wan, where are you? I've just sent you the findings. It looks bad for the Republic. The information on the datapad is authentic. It's real. There has to be a reason. I don't know how or why, but there has to be. We need to get to the bottom of this. He clicked the button again to transmit, then leaned back against the room's console, arms crossed. How could someone frame the Republic so easily? As if the Force had been listening in on the moment, Anakin's comlink finally beeped. He looked at the door one more time, then figured Mill could wait another few minutes. Well, you sure took your sweet time. I thought we had a galaxy to save. The low hiss of the communicator's open channel continued, though no voice came over it. Obi-Wan? Obi-Wan, can you hear me?
You see?
A voice spoke. Someone who was definitely not Obi-Wan Kenobi. The female voice was raspy and oily, two short words loaded with menace.
He brought a communicator with him.
Who is this? Anakin yelled. What have you done with Obi-Wan? The comlink beeped a low tone, dropping the connection dead. Anakin stared at it, gripping the device in the palm of his mechanical hand, as if he could penetrate through the wiring and composite to reveal the true nature of who was on the other side. He almost hit the button again to send a hailing signal, but thought better of it. In fact, right now, this comlink was the wrong kind of evidence. With that thought, he tossed the device into the air, drew his lightsaber, and in one move slashed it in two. It fell to the floor, each half landing with a clink, steam coming from burning orange-yellow seams. Master Skywalker? Anakin looked up to find the door ajar and Mill poking her head through. I felt your... Her lips pursed and nose wrinkled as she searched for the right word. Concern. It's okay, Mill, he said. Fists formed at his side and his jaw clenched. Thoughts turning into fears, turning into so much more. Who could he go to? They weren't supposed to be in contact. He couldn't reach out to the Jedi Council. Obi-Wan had told him to stay away. And now someone had all of the information that might cast blame on the Republic. That someone had to be the agent Dooku had sent to Cadon Amoydia. Master, are you all right? Anakin looked at Mill, the tanned skin and horns of a Zabrak, but the eyes of universal youth. That moment down on Langston seemed so profound. The intersection of spiritual awakening and a commitment to righteous choices, and yet, after all of that, she was still just a youngling, curious, uncertain, and maturing.
she would grow into herself and her abilities to make her own choices, but for now, she relied on her elders as he used to. "No," he said quietly, "I'm not all right. And I lied. Things aren't okay." "Can we..." she started before catching herself. Then she looked to either side, each direction down the long hallways of the cruiser, before stepping in the room and letting the door seal behind her. "Smart," Anakin thought. "Can we help Master Kenobi?" "You heard," Anakin said. "Well, you kind of yelled it." Back on Tatooine, he had a choice to make. With Obi-Wan in peril, wounds still fresh in his heart from burying his mother, different paths were laid out before him. Go and help Obi-Wan, or stay on his home planet as Master Windu dictated. But in the end, he didn't make a choice. He was a Padawan, still operating under so many layers of guidance, and Padme had been the one to decide for both of him. However, now he was a Jedi Knight, with the authority to make decisions, even ones people didn't like. Except it turned out that even Obi-Wan bent the rules from time to time. He might as well start now. "Let me think." Anakin began pacing around the room, ideas snapping into focus. They couldn't include the clones in this. That visual might trigger a far greater conflict. That was Obi-Wan's entire reason for going alone. Same thing with the Jedi. Any officials with any type of ties to the Republic would cause problems. No, this had to be discreet and swift. "When you were helping that family down on Langston, did you happen to see any vessels with hyperdrive capabilities? Maybe in the neighborhood around there?" Mill's expression turned puzzled with a scrunched face. "There are a number of them in the landing area. They're not really being used right now. They're too busy trying to rebuild from the battle." That moment of decision. In a previous life, it meant waiting for permission, for guidance. Obi-Wan telling him what to do and when to do it, or Padme using her status to make a decision for them. But here, now, the choice was his. He could stay on the cruiser, finish the distribution assignment on Langston, then head back to the Jedi Temple in a few days. Or he could go down to the surface now, let Mil guide him to an available ship, and fly to Cato Ne Moidia. What was proper versus what was right, it was right after all. Even Chancellor Palpatine believed he should be out there alongside Obi-Wan. In fact, only the rules of the Jedi stood in the way. This was Anakin Skywalker as a Jedi Knight. Finally, with the freedom to choose his path. And he was going to take it. To protect Obi-Wan Kenobi. And maybe even the galaxy. "Can you show me where these ships are?"
"Sure," Mil said. "But what for?"
Anakin looked down at the long corridor, a handful of clones passing by with nothing more than a salute. "It's like I asked you the other day. You said you wanted to help people, right?"
Chapter 28. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
The day had not turned up any further leads, despite a full morning and afternoon on the surface. The local officials let him investigate alone, and Ventress was nowhere to be found. But even that unexpected freedom of movement failed to prove any more fruitful, producing only further gathering of scientific data that was ambiguous at best. Obi-Wan had returned to Zara, pressure accumulating from two ticking chronos. Rug's lead, whatever that was, and the potentially disastrous information sitting on the mystery datapad. He had only been gone from his room for 10, possibly 15 minutes, a simple walk to clear his mind, the rhythm of movement enough to ground him while sharpening his mental acuity. Yet when he turned the corner of the hallway in the palatial government offices, a problem immediately jumped out. He walked at a normal pace, conscious of any possible surveillance as he returned to his quarters, but it became clear as he approached. The door was ajar. He stopped in front of it, examining everything from the sliding mechanism to the embedded electromechanical lock. When he pushed at the door itself, though, it barely moved, the usual motion sensors failing to trigger. The lock sat devoid of any status lights, as if something drained the power or cut it from the entire system. He pushed, his palms shoving hard to nudge the panel open enough to let him slide through, but once he got inside, he saw a bigger problem than a busted door. On the floor was Anakin's supposedly impenetrable case, separated from the scanner that acted as its cover story. Obi-Wan knelt down, remembering Anakin's claim that the alloy might even be tough enough to withstand a lightsaber. And here that hypothesis had been put to the test, because the case itself was punctured, a burn mark that Obi-Wan was quite familiar with, strategically placed to be able to split the case in two without harming the contents, a precision that would require training in the Jedi arts. A Jedi controlled panic, recognizing the onset of such an urge and then tempting it with both physical and emotional control. But considering the contents of the case, a single comm link and a small data pad that might change the fate of the galaxy, brought Obi-Wan the closest to panic he probably would ever get. He scanned the room, a desperate search for both devices, but with the simplicity of the space, it was clear that both had been taken. He picked up the pieces of the case, taking a closer look to confirm his suspicion about the lightsaber burns. The rest of his things lay right where he'd left them, from his other equipment to his storage crate. Only this was the evidence in plain sight. Obi-Wan stood in the middle of the room, his mind plotting out the different steps forward. So many variables came into play. Who stole the equipment? Who had they shown it to? Was it contained to Cadon Amordia, or had it gotten bigger, dragging both the CIS and Republic into this? Who would have access to and training in lightsabers? Footsteps came from down the hall, gradually approaching until they stopped outside his door with a firm step.
Master Kenobi,
a guard said,
your presence is requested.
Had the culprit resorted to stealth, the comm link and the data pad would have been recovered without giving away what was afoot. And yet here, everything was placed with as much precision as the lightsaber cut itself. All of it came with clear intention, from the way the case opened to the fact that it sat in plain sight. This wasn't about evidence. This was a message.
Master Kenobi,
the guard repeated. He turned around, only to find that two other guards accompanied the speaker, all with weapons drawn.
We will need your weapon as well.
Minister Alu Vayam looked at the gathering, a small group to fit in an office about half the size of Palpatine's, but with more ornate decor. The wall of shiny and glowing sculptures standing on the polished stone floor, a far cry from the muted tones and occasional artwork of the Chancellor's office. Obi-Wan walked in, escorted and with his lightsaber now in the possession of one of the guards. Across the way, further officials sat, an elevated podium that established hierarchy, despite the fact that this wasn't a trial. No obvious recording devices stood in place, though those types of things could be hidden easily within walls or statues. Assuming never proved to be a good strategy, so Obi-Wan instead merely wondered if Senator Dodd and the rest of the proper Trade Federation leadership listened. Or possibly Count Dooku.
Around the room stood another set of guards, and behind Obi-Wan sat several officials that he hadn't met before. Roog was nowhere to be found. And perhaps more important, neither was Ventress.
Master Kenobi, thank you for coming on such short notice.
Iam's tone remained cordial, and Obi-Wan weighed the different ways to respond. Whether the officials had seen the incriminating evidence was unclear. At the same time, feigning ignorance might appear at best patronizing, at worst, deceptive. And despite some of the twists and turns caused by Anakin's communicator and the mystery datapad, all of Obi-Wan's decisions sparked from a purity of design, a commitment to finding a way to de-escalate the war, to save lives, to abide by the Jedi creed of peace and justice. Yet despite his best intentions, he may have accelerated the greatest crisis the Republic had ever seen. Obi-Wan elected to go with a straightforward response.
Thank you, Minister Iam. When I arrived on Cato Ne Moidia, I promised that I would do everything in my power to identify the perpetrator of the crime. I do have several leads at the moment, along with a wealth of forensic data. I hope to have findings for you sooner rather than later.
Voices murmured around the room, and Obi-Wan waited for them to settle down.
We appreciate all of the efforts you have made, Master Kenobi.
Iam nodded, and though the guards still stood at attention, no air of aggressiveness came from them. Obi-Wan wondered if perhaps the motivation for this gathering